So let me preface the discussion on sea level rise by saying that our objective here is not to fully solve the issue of sea level rise, but what I'm trying to do in this situation is really just give everybody a primer. This is the sea level rise 101. So I'm going to hit some of the aspects of sea level rise and what are the implications of that based on some high level studies from NOAA, the Army Corps, and some other resources. And then really just using some tools to help us visualize what sea level rise might look like in different scenarios and think about it in terms of not necessarily the 2100 time frame, but more of a 30 to 50 year kind of implication. And again, it's really, we're not going into the deep dive in this report on sea level rise, but we're really way up here at the surface of sea level rise. So what I've handed around is the visuals, and the first page is really the overview. So the chart on the other hand, let me just start by the sea level rise, estimates by NOAA and some of the other reports showing that global sea level rises have risen by 8 inches since 1880. And 1880 is important because that's when the record keeping started. And they're projecting that by 2100, the NOAA is projecting sea level is going to rise between 1 and 4 feet. And in Maine, and that's just sort of a, As I read the reports, that's the kind of a general consensus. But in the Gulf of Maine and regionally, in different areas of the world, sea level rise could be bigger or smaller. And so in Maine, in the Gulf of Maine in particular, sea level rise could have be more felt than in other places in the world. So what you see on the left-hand side is basically a summary of the NOAA report, the most recent report showing projections of sea level rise estimated in what we'll call the low rise, the lowest scenario to all the way to the extreme scenario. So it gives you a range of different rises of sea level in different times. And so what I tried to do is pick the 2050 and the 2070, kind of a highlighted point, which are that sort of what I consider the lifespan of an investment that you might make in the waterfront. And I think that's sort of important for our planning purposes, just to say that we're not necessarily looking out to the farthest extreme because it gets less predictable. But as you get a little closer in time and as the city is making investments in certain things, most investments have a lifespan of 30 to 50 years. So we want to look to that time frame. Yes?
So it's my understanding that federal funds are not available to anything unless they pass a certain threshold of sea level rise. I'm not sure what number that is, or whether it's 20 years or 50 years or stream or whatever. But
yep, and that may be true. I'm not getting to that point at this point. What I also wanted to do is, because I knew some of you would have more interest and time to really dive in if you wanted to in your own time, there's a bunch of good sources of information. I've looked at NOAA, I've looked at the Army Corps of Engineers, Maine Geological Survey has a whole mapping section so you can really zoom into your own property and look if you have waterfront property to see what the implications would be. The Island Institute has a lot of awesome information on sea level rise, they do a really good job. So I put some references on here in case anybody really wanted to dive in.
But I do think that if we want to...
USA Army Corps of Engineers.
Any infrastructure improvements we might even consider or recommend might benefit from federal funding or some grants.
Yep.
We want to think of maybe a certain target of that.
So I think that is where we're headed in this discussion as we get into the sort of the strategies and recommendations is knowing what we know about sea level rise, what sort of high level guidance would this committee recommend that the city take when investing in public infrastructure on the waterfront, for example? That's the question that we're thinking about.
But these maps aren't intended to be a detailed, precise look at the impact on any infrastructure. They're supposed to be a broad brush, high-level look.
Yeah. The only thing that I'm doing in this exercise is showing that these are the projected sea level rise numbers, And then the next step in the process is let's just visualize what that means in terms of sea level rise and storm surge in the infrastructure that we just went through. That's it. It's a thought process. So it's definitely not a deep dive into the way you need to address it and those kinds of things. But it's important to recognize that, you know, there are some things at risk because of sea level rise, and you have to think about those with making investments. So thinking about the visualization tool, it's really a mapping exercise that I pulled right from the Maine Geological Survey, and it's a GIS exercise. And what they did was they started with something called the highest astronomical tide, which is like the highest tide that you can get during the course of a year. And the reason that they did that is because it allows you to start to think about, if you have the highest of high tides, and then you have an additional, 3 feet on top of that, what does that really mean for your flooding and for your other, the damage that could occur because of that? And also, as we're thinking about, not necessarily in this group, but in other situations, what's the implication of shoreland zoning standards? So all shoreland zoning is based on something called the highest annual tide, and that could change based on the implications of sea level rise. So there are some land use implications there, which we're not going to dive into. So as I said, this is all data based on the Maine Geological Survey. What they did was, I'm not at all going to go into the math because that would be, I'm not sure I could explain it, first of all. But they used basically three different points along the coast of Maine, Portland, Bar Harbor, and Eastport, average. They averaged sea level rise, and they came up with these scenarios that I'm going to be showing.
Who's they in this case? Maine Geologic Survey or NOAA?
Yeah, Maine Geological Survey.
So NOAA's, the NOAA estimates, do they have any connection to?
Yep, Maine Geological Survey uses NOAA's, they use NOAA's data plus these, the tide elevations to figure out, from Portland Bar Harbor and Eastport to figure out what the highest annual tide was.
All right. So it's a combination
of things, and they use something what I call the bathtub method, which is basically if you put a lot of water and more water in the bathtub than they can handle, it basically kind of overflows.
So the data is provided by Maine GIS, but it's not necessarily originating from them.
Right. They originated the lines for Maine.
Yeah. Yep. Thank you. I was confused.
All right. So here we go. So on these maps, what I tried to do was the red square essentially shows what I'll call the intermediate sort of scenario for sea level rise in the 30 to 50 year kind of time frame. And this is Snow Marine Park. I've shown all the other, sea level rise scenarios from the highest astronomical tide all the way to the most extreme version, but I think the focal point of these maps is really just that sort of intermediate phase. So you can see, the bluish color, the whatever color that is, we'll call it bluish, light bluish, is sort of the lower end scenario versus the red, which is sort of the other, the next step up in that 30 to 50 year time horizon.
So we'll still be able to sled down the hill. It's just going to be into the water.
Well, there's a big
scheme. Only at high tide.
But I think if you Snow Marine Park is kind of interesting in the sense that if you look at it, the black line sort of in the middle there, that's the highest astronomical tide. And as I was talking to Matt about this a little bit earlier today, he mentioned that there is already some flooding during the highest of high tides in that area. So it's all sort of seems to make sense. It's all based on elevation also, so it's a LIDAR data, topographic information.
What was your thinking in mapping 2100 as opposed to 2050 or 2070? What were you thinking?
The data isn't broken down. The visualization tool isn't broken down that way. It's broken down by the 2100, so the only way to get to focus on the 2050 or the 2070 is to kind of pick what the sea level rise projections are in those areas. So that's why the red box.
All right, thank you.
Yeah. So there are some limits to the tool.
Yeah.
And to the person who's actually implementing the tool.
No, that's all right. And for this purpose, it doesn't need to be terribly accurate. We just need an order of magnitude impact to know if there are recommendations.
Yeah. So what I tried to do was say, using the data that I had available to me, where you really want to be focusing is on the shorter term, that 30 to 50 year time horizon. And the red rectangle approximates what NOAA says would be the 30 to 50 year, you know, intermediate sea level rise.
So NOAA's going from like 1.1 to 1.9 feet, which is why you tried to pick the ones closest to that.
That's what I did. Yep.
And a tenth of a, it doesn't matter, a tenth of a foot for the purposes of this analysis.
For the purposes of where we are?
Gotcha.
Yes.
Thank you.
And the next one jumps up to 3.9, so it's really not relevant to that time frame.
Probably need to find a way to explain that in one of your overview slides for people who might pick this up to the extent that this at a high level or some portion of this makes its way into the plan.
Yep.
We don't need to solve that today, but how do we make that clear?
So breezing through the other ones, Sandy Beach, you can see sort of the implications there, particularly for the first two, you know, scenarios.
Do we lose sand at Sandy Beach in a big storm, or gain sand, or neither?
Might gain some, yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Public landing is the next one. You can see there, particularly in the red, that's sort of the longer time horizon, but still within the frame of our planning minds, if you will. There's
like
some
Matt
implications.
Right,
yep, Matt's skating rink gets a little bigger.
And you want to just clarify that the piers aren't underwater?
Yes.
I did. Did you see him?
No. What's that?
No, I know nothing.
So, one thing I do want to clarify when you're looking through these maps in a little more detail is that you'll see like the blue shade kind of comes in over the piers that are actually out in the water, and that's because the data is based on land elevation points, and the floats and the piers are either floating on the water or piers are raised or elevated up above. We can try to do a little bit of figuring to see what the elevation is of, you know, fixed piers, like for this area, versus what the highest astronomical tide elevation is, and just to get a general sense of, you know, if the fixed pier is already going to be below the highest astronomical tide or what the distance is. So that's something I have to work on a little bit. But generally speaking, I think, you know, the tool here is really showing, it shows all the piers and stuff that are underwater, but they're not actually underwater.
Okay, so the public landing pier as it presently exists in this 30 to 50 year time frame will not be.
It would be.
It might be.
It would be.
Yeah, it might be.
They actually showed it.
These maps don't look at that.
Harbor Park these maps aren't accurate enough to say
for certain
what the impact of a fixed pier out into the water is going to be, because the LIDAR picks up the topography along the shore and on land, not necessarily how high up above the water line a pier actually is. Yeah. You know what I mean? So what I'm saying is, if we want to just get a quick sense of, you know, the public landing fixed pier is, you know, how that could be implicated, how that could be affected by a 1.2 foot sea level rise, we'd need to know what the elevation of the public landing is, and then do the math. Right? Yeah.
Do you know elevations for the for the different piers?
I do have one for the public landing.
So we could say that.
So you guys could put your heads together.
So it's going to be, the mapping tool is going to look this way, but the note, I think we've talked about pulling off a note to say, you know, the elevation of the public landing is X.
Yeah.
You know, sea level, the highest annual tide is Y. If you have a 1.2 level, you know, 1.2 foot sea level rise, the fixed portion of the pier would be either underwater or not.
Or not.
And I think that's important. That's important to know.
Yeah, for sure.
And, but...
Because you're right.
In sort of the higher level thinking of where we are in the harbor plan, you know, when you're making investments, we just talked about this, you know, you want to make sure that you're planning for sea level rise, so that that's a question that might get, you know, tossed down the road a little bit for more detailed analysis, for sure.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's 8 o'clock. What is your pleasure?
You want me to hit the last couple? There's only two or three left, so I'll quickly go through these. And
do you have an estimate of how much more time we need?
5 minutes.
Oh,
you got it.
Do you want to address the other issue?
Why not?
My stomach's
growling,
but I can handle it.
That would be a good idea.
All right. So I have 5 minutes left. I'm going to address two things. One,
can I just touch on something on this since we're going to rush through this on tide rise? Something we also might want to take into account is not just public properties; is all the properties on the waterfront. Ron has brought up a point that some of the places that are right on the waterfront, which have always been waste dumps, say FMC, where there's been a coal. That kind of stuff may be underwater. So we're not just looking at things being underwater, we're thinking of potentially pollutants leaching into the water that haven't been leaching into the water. And do we want to, as a group, on the high level, say this is something we need to look at down the road as pieces of property are underwater? What will that do to the environment?
Well, and that might not even be something you need to map. Maybe it's a question that you need to ask and flag as a...
Yeah.
But you know, I mean,
so this tide rise can have more effects than just losing pieces of property. Things have now become part of the ocean.
Yeah.
That have never been part of the ocean.
Like the ferry terminal is a landfill.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I believe that is. I could be wrong about the harbor park, but I believe the ferry terminal is certainly a landfill.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a good high-level question to kind of keep in mind as we're talking about sea level rises. Yeah, I mean, we're focusing on these specific properties because that's within the purview. But there's a higher level policy question which could be kind of put into the context of the thinking. You know, it's also important to, because there are a lot of implications of sea level rise, that's for sure.
And comp plan will pick up some of this discussion too.
Yeah, we didn't even, comp plan, we're probably going to get into a larger mapping because there's some inland impacts as well.
Yeah.
I haven't really even looked at yet, so. All right, so here's Middle Pier.
As in Will Lindsay, Brookhaven and Drain.
Yep. Commercial Fish Pier, you can see, again, sort of that sort of limitation of the mapping. But, it looks like the highest annual tide kind of runs along where traditionally would have been the actual shoreline. And then the red kind of encroaches just a little bit. This is the 23 Samoset property. I added the sewer treatment plant to this one because I thought that was interesting.
And maybe the question there is the slope too stable?
Yeah. All right.